Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we go with part two of this week's Q&A with Layla. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Good, good. All right, so let's continue. What's our next question, please?
Yeah, we've got an email from Nora. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm a frequent and longtime listener to your podcasts. Love the chemistry. It's all good. I'm a 75-year-old female, recently diagnosed with moderate to severe cervical disc disease at C5, C6, and C6, C7. I take lots of supplements, including D, magnesium orotate, and strontium at night.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of pain in my left trap muscle right up into my neck.
Yep.
Currently, I'm in physical therapy, but no relief.
Right.
What other supplements or modalities can help me? I can't play golf.
Yeah. Well, so this is only to a minor extent a nutritional issue, I have to say.
Okay.
Because there's a structural problem, obviously, where because of spurs on the bone that develop with chronic arthritis as you age, there's a little more of a tendency to get nerve compression. So that's part of it. That being said, there are some studies that suggest that disc disease improves when you take lots of fish oil, so you can do that. It's going to take several months to obtain relief.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, go for maybe 6 or even 8 capsules of fish oil a day if you tolerate that, because that has an anti-inflammatory effect. You can take curcumin. Still, this is a, it involves a need for some kind of physical treatment. So, you know, chiropractor could administer that treatment. Physical therapy obviously hasn't been that helpful for you. Perhaps acupuncture can be helpful. These are some mm-hmm. things that could make a difference. So, I happen to be a big believer in chiropractic because, as you get older, you get these imbalances, aches and pains. I think nobody makes it to, 80 or so without, some degree of back pain, neck pain, et cetera, shoulder pain, hip pain. And some of these can be alleviated by the right kind of manipulation. So there you go. There are also trigger point modalities where you can inject something like lidocaine. I prefer not to inject steroids. I don't do this. I used to. There was a time where I was administering trigger point therapy, something called neural therapy, which is a German-style therapy for pain. And there are people who work with that.
Is this something that can be helped with prolotherapy?
Possibly.
Remember prolotherapy?
Possibly,
yeah.
But I'm thinking, prolotherapy, I'm a little concerned about, the neck area. Because you don't want to put, generally the theory of prolotherapy is you tighten things up with a type of a substance that's usually a natural substance, but it's a substance that actually temporarily creates inflammation, which tightens the ligaments. That's the theory. That might be applicable to knees, maybe back, maybe hips. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd be that comfortable doing the neck. We'd have to ask a prolotherapist.
Yeah. Oh, Nora, we hope you feel better soon.
Mm-hmm.
Boost your fish oil at the very least. Curcumin, Boswellan. Yeah. Okay.
And there's an element, certainly as we contemplate people with arthritis, that anti-inflammatory diet, which is eliminating things that are pro-inflammatory, and that may be wheat or maybe dairy or, too much sugar, excess
vegetable
weight
oils,
promotes inflammation,
caffeine.
Fat,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And many
all
patients
kind of
obtain relief, with an elimination diet. They get off of the bad things, and their overall bodily burden of inflammation declines.
Yes.
I noticed that when I went on
nightshades is also helpful.
Yeah, I noticed that when I went on the Whole30 diet. Where, I don't think I was, I wasn't having crippling pain, but I was actually sidelined a little bit from doing triathlons because my body couldn't tolerate the high levels of running and heavy duty training that were required to do that long distance endurance event that takes 3 hours continuous exercise. And with the Whole30, my body was less adversely affected by the pounding and the concussion and stress of pretty consistent workouts.
Yeah.
You have to pretty much, you can't do it with like one, you know, just being a weekend warrior, you know, like doing 2 days of exercise. You got to do at least 3, 4, maybe 5 days a week of some form of of exercise to build the stamina and endurance to do that. So, you know, I found that helpful.
Right. That and feed your body right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that could be anything that can be inflammatory in a person's body, food allergens included.
Mm-hmm.
But the wheat and the gluten and the dairy, as you say, vegetable oils, sugar, fake sugar like aspartame,
mm-hmm.
all of that kind of thing. Too much use of over-the-counter medicines, or you want to make sure that, you know, even the fillers and binders in your supplements and your vitamins are of quality, you know, not your over-the-counter whatever you get at the local drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
So everything counts.
Yep.
Everything counts. Absolutely. Okay. We've got another email. This is from Alice, but a different Alice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. After bypass surgery, my husband was prescribed a statin medication by his cardiologist. When he developed extremely troublesome side effects, the doctor recommended that he supplement with CoQ10.
Mm-hmm.
Yay! A cardiologist said that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, right.
Okay. He has switched statins several times and does not seem to be able to tolerate any of them, so he's discontinued all of them.
Right.
Is there still any value in continuing the CoQ10?
Okay, so what we used to think is that CoQ10 could antidote the adverse effects of statins, because one of the things that statins do is they destroy ubiquinol or ubiquinone, which is CoQ10,
yeah.
Or they prevent its synthesis by the body. So you need to take outside CoQ10 because your body won't be making enough. However, just simply doing that, it may maybe ameliorate or somewhat take the edge off the side effects, but it doesn't make the side effects go away, in my experience, because there are other ways in which these side effects manifest. So it is not, while you should take CoQ10 for other reasons when you take a statin, because CoQ10 is very important for the body, you should not expect that if you have terrible leg cramps or, you know, any of the number of the symptoms that the statins can create for you, that CoQ10 will antidote that. And, you know, you could take a whole bucket of that. You could take, you know, a whole bottle of CoQ10. It's not going to do the trick. So is there value to taking it? Well, I think you can answer that question, Lou.
Oh, my gosh. CoQ10 is most concentrated. First of all, it's a constituent of our metabolism, but it's most concentrated in the heart. Anybody with any kind of heart condition, and your husband, Alice, has had bypass surgery, so
yeah.
Obviously there's heart disease. You know, CoQ10 on the top of the list, magnesium, and possibly ribose.
Right.
At the very least, and fish oil.
Yeah.
Some amount of fish oil, depending on what other blood thinners are involved here,
right.
I suppose.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah. And
carnitine,
the other thing is just in terms of anti-aging, what demonstrably,
yeah.
as you age, your production of CoQ10 goes down. So maybe if you're a healthy, you know, 30-year-old, maybe you don't need it. Maybe if you want to really accentuate your athletic performance, if you're like a Tour de France cyclist, you might want to put it into your regimen. But I've been taking it since it came out. I've been taking, you know, when is that, 20 years ago or so?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's a real way to offset one of the things that happens as you age, your CoQ10 production goes down.
Yeah, yeah. And just a word, even in my personal experience, because I take it too, I take it because I have mitral valve prolapse. So
oh, yeah. Okay.
Besides taking magnesium taurate, yeah. I find a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Between CoQ10 and ubiquinol.
Oh, okay.
I prefer ubiquinol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. It's like the more heavy-duty, take-care-of-business form of CoQ10
right.
for
so
me.
If I might
just,
ask,
yeah.
you know, I've written extensively about mitral valve prolapse, as you're aware, you know, and
mm-hmm.
many of our listeners have read my articles and books on mitral valve prolapse, but what are the symptoms that you're trying to combat with the CoQ10? What does it do for you?
Well, I just take the CoQ10 because it's good for my heart, but it's the magnesium that's most important to me, because if I'm low in magnesium or if I'm not dosing my magnesium taurate correctly, my heartbeat will keep me up at night.
Yes.
I hear it.
Yes.
It's like a bass drum.
Right.
But with magnesium, all is quiet.
We hear that again and again from our patients with mitral valve prolapse, because mitral valve prolapse creates sometimes arrhythmias, but sometimes a more, even if your heart rate is normal, like what is called a visceral hypersensitivity, like you're more attuned to it, and that can create, you know, like you're having sleep disturbances, anxiety, or just an unpleasant sensation. And the magnesium has a rate-regulating effect on the heart.
Right. Right. And in the presence, in the setting of mitral valve prolapse, the magnesium level will be low anyway in the body because it's setting off the autonomic nervous system. You know, my husband can tell me, oh, you need to get more magnesium because I will startle easily when he walks into the room or something, you know. So, whoa, oh my God, I didn't know you were there. Whoops. Yeah. So it's that kind of a thing. But ultimately, it's magnesium. But I, getting back to CoQ10, I do feel like I feel a difference in terms of energy between CoQ10 and ubiquinol, and I prefer ubiquinol.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, there's just, there still remains some controversies, you know, Layla. Some people claim that CoQ10 is just fine, and that, you know.
Oh,
you
and it is.
And you needn't go to the additional expense of buying ubiquinol, but I generally prescribe ubiquinol because I think it's more potent. And ultimately more cost-effective. It is more expensive, but it delivers more of the active form of CoQ10 to the cells, to the mitochondria.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Alice, best of luck to your husband. Thank you for your question. All right. Oh, we've got a really interesting question here, Dr. Hoffman, from Connie. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I've been taking this supplement, nicotinamide riboside, for a month, and I feel wonderful.
Niacel, right. We're getting great feedback on that. Yeah.
Yeah. My mother, age 86, is afraid to take it because she has AFib and has a leaky heart valve and will need surgery soon. And also, I have high blood pressure. I have an elevated diastolic blood pressure. I'm taking blood pressure medication.
Right.
Is it okay that I continue taking?
Well, let's, you know, first deal with the blood pressure. It should be fine. There's no contraindication with any known medication with niacel or nicotinamide riboside. When it comes to someone who needs surgery for, I mean, the reason you need surgery when you have a bad valve at that advanced age, they don't want to do surgery on an older person unnecessarily, but what will happen is with a leaky valve, you'll develop heart failure. And so one way to forestall the surgery, potentially, is to take things that enhance the efficacy of the mitochondria, which are working extra hard in the heart. The heart has to beat, you know, umpty-ump times in your lifetime, and the mitochondria weaken, and providing ubiquinol or providing niacel, which also works on energy production in the heart, is a very good idea. There shouldn't be a problem with that. And there's no problem with taking it right up to and through surgery and soon thereafter. So, you know, I get it that she's concerned. And she probably has doctors who are not encouraging her to take supplements. In fact, you know, they'll say, well, stop taking all that junk, you know, especially if you're going to have surgery. But, you know, you have to know what to do at times of surgery. And there's some supplements that are perfectly compatible with surgery. As we've gone through extensively, we have an article on the website, Supplements for Surgery. And there are others that we'd want people to lay off of for a while.
Yeah. Dr. Hoffman, I also have to mention, Connie says she's the big, intelligent medicine listener. And she burns CDs with your podcasts for her mother and her uncle.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
See, this, you know, we sometimes, you know, you wonder, what can you get someone, like an older person, who's probably got a lot of stuff? And one of the things you could do is, and it's cheap, right? Free, right? You just get it. So maybe, you know, if you're, you know, send a grandkid over and set up an iPad for them so that they can listen to their favorite programs. You know, there's a way that you can just put an icon on your desktop of your computer or the iPad and set it up that way. We've got a 97-year-old in our family, and that's what we do for her. And she's banging away on her iPad.
God bless.
And she's, wow, you know, watching Netflix, and she's using Facebook, and whenever she wants to, she can just, push a button and listen to a podcast. So, that's
terrific.
That's the gift of love, and not necessarily the gift of, a big, credit card purchase.
Right. Yeah. Oh.
Who needs another sweater or necktie? You know, right?
Right. Connie, thank you for the devotion. Thank you for your questions. Best of luck.
Yeah.
With your mother, yourself, your uncle.
And play this one for your mother.
Yeah. Play this one for your mother. Oh gosh. We have, speaking of heart disease, okay, we're on a roll, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah.
This is about congestive heart failure.
All right.
Linda writes, my daughter has just been diagnosed with congestive heart failure at age 37.
Wow. Okay.
Oh my.
So let's hold on. You, what could cause someone at 37 to have congestive heart failure? Well, it's certainly a disease that's more common with aging, because what we're seeing is statistically a reduction in the number of people who die from heart attacks. We're actually saving people. However, their heart muscle is damaged and they go on to live longer, and we're actually seeing an upsurge in congestive heart failure, for which there are not a lot of really good drugs. The drugs somewhat ameliorate it, but don't really fix it. So, what could be the cause of a young person? Well, 37-year-old female, like, less likely to have, arteriosclerosis and a heart attack. So what could be the problem? It could be a valve problem. There's sometimes valvular problems, but usually they occur later in life. Sometimes there's a viral problem. We see some people, young people, getting a virus of the heart that sometimes necessitates a heart transplant. Alternatively, there are certain autoimmune diseases that attack the heart rarely. So this is an unusual circumstance, where congestive heart failure is occurring in such a young individual. So what can be done? Well, I think you mentioned some of the things that can be done. Why don't we go over them again?
Well, for congestive heart failure, and I remember reading even on Dr. Steven Sinatra's website, it's a lack of energy in the heart.
Yep.
And you need ubiquinol for that. You need CoQ10 for that.
Right. And high doses, really high doses.
High doses, yeah.
That's where I might go with 400 of CoQ10 twice daily, or 200 of ubiquinol twice daily. Really high doses, maybe even 1,200 of CoQ10 or 600 or 800 of ubiquinol, because they've actually done studies on this. And I learned this early on in the 1980s. I had a patient who had congestive heart failure, and she was a lady who came in pulling a little wagon all the time, because she was, I don't know, she liked to, she couldn't carry it. She was out of breath, but she had like this, one of these little rolly bags. And, she was always huffing and puffing. So we gave her some CoQ10. In those days, it was a big deal to give 30 or 50. We didn't know that we should give higher doses then. It had just been introduced.
Yeah.
So I gave her those. And then finally, I decided to give her 100, and I kept changing doses with her, and she got kind of confused. And, finally she said, my daughter lives on the West Coast. I've been afraid to go on a plane because I've just been so exhausted to travel, but I feel pretty good now. So I think I'll go and do that. So she went and she came back, and I said, well, how did you feel? And she said, I felt great. I had absolutely no limitation. I felt fantastic. I was walking all over the place. In San Francisco, it's very hilly. I was able to keep up with my daughter, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, so that 100 milligrams of CoQ10 worked out really well for you. And she said, what do you mean 100 milligrams? I said, well, that's what I told you to take, 100 milligrams. She said, oh, I was confused. I ended up taking 400 milligrams. Oh, I said, gee, I hadn't really intended to give you that much. But by accident, we discovered that, and she said, that's the dose that really kicks in for me to help me be less breathless and tired when I walk. And so that really, for the first time, demonstrated to me that, some of the initial trials were, CoQ10 doesn't work for congestive heart failure. They used 50 or 100. But what they needed to do is use much higher doses to see if that would work.
Isn't that something? And there you have it. That's testimony. There's your anecdotal anecdotal evidence, yeah.
N of one, but, you know, since then it's been scientifically proven that the higher doses work. So let's go.
Well, you know, we need to go back to N of one because that's personalized medicine. That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
N of one is a scientific term, which means that, you know, we didn't do a big double-blind controlled study with thousands of individuals. We just, you know, anecdotally, it worked for one person. That doesn't necessarily prove something, but it's very hypothesis-forming and indicates that maybe there's something going on. All right, so come back to a summary of what we should use. We should use magnesium, in particular magnesium taurate. We should use ribose, and ribose has to be taken by the teaspoon, you know, like 5 grams 3 times daily. We need to use CoQ10 at high doses. We could probably use Niacel at 250 milligrams twice daily because that's also helpful for the heart. And carnitine may make a difference too. L-carnitine could be helpful for this, something that Steven Sinatra also likes for his heart patients.
Did we mention fish oil?
And, of course, fish oil. Thank you.
Fish oil, right.
And fish oil is helpful because it's a little bit anti-arrhythmic. But there seems to be benefits in congestive heart failure, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, Linda. We wish your daughter the best of luck. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So that's all the time we have for today's program. Time flies when you're having fun.
It does. Wow.
Just a reminder to listeners, our usual reminder is these podcasts are free. We're delighted to provide them for you for your information and entertainment. But one of the ways that you can help subsidize the ongoing production and distribution of these podcasts, which, you know, there are costs associated with this, is to visit our website at drhoffman.com, shop at our Hoffman Center dispensary. We very carefully curate the products there. They're the best quality at the best prices, and you can thereby support your health in two ways. One, you'll keep getting podcasts, and you'll also enjoy the highest quality supplements at the best prices. Thanks very much for joining us, and thank you, Layla.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.